Hello, I'm Georgina Marshall, Global Head of Research at ISS, and welcome to the ISS Proxy Bulletin podcast series. This April 2019 instalment is going to give updates on the US and Canadian proxy seasons looking forward into May. Joining me to talk about anticipated AGM volumes, top trends and hot meetings for the next part of US season are ISS Special Counsel Pat McGurn and Compensation Research Analyst Beth Spector. Following the US update, our senior Canadian analyst, John Vizikas, who joins us from Toronto, will provide some insights into the proxy season in Canada. So, Pat, are we at peak season in the US market yet?
Yes, we are. I think it's going to be coast-to-coast shareholder meetings from this point out. There are around 2,000 AGMs already visible on the horizon through the end of May. Volumes really shift into high gear during the last full week of April, with more than 315 meetings set to take place from the 22nd to the 26th. The pace accelerates the following week, which happens this year to straddle April and May, with 335 meetings currently on the calendar, including what looks like to be the season's first triple-digit daily volume on May 2nd. Meeting activity will shift into overdrive during the first full week of May. Daily AGM counts will top 100 each on the 8th and 9th, and total volume for the week will likely exceed 400 meetings. As it currently stands, the week of May 13th to the 17th looks like the pinnacle of the U.S. season, with close to 460 meetings already in the queue. This mega meeting week includes the season's busiest day, May 16th, when we expect more than 150 U.S. meetings will be convened. Volumes won't let up much, however, for the week of May 20th to the 24th, with nearly 370 meetings already on the radar screen prior to what is the unofficial end of peak season, at least with the post-Memorial Day lull.
Wow, that's quite a schedule. And what major themes are coming into focus so far for 2019?
Well, Georgine, it's interesting. Some of the 2019 season's biggest stories concern matters that won't arise at annual meetings due to settlements, withdrawals, or omission of the latter category via the SEC's no-action process. Ending up on the cutting room floor are a significant number of 2019's most anticipated events. This includes now-settled proxy contests at eBay, Caesars Palace, and Papa John's, and Starboard Value's decision to drop its pop-up resistance to Bristol-Myers Squibb's now-approved deal with Celgene. It also includes the omission or withdrawal of many of the season's new or novel shareholder resolutions, such as the SEC axing an aggressive climate change proposal at ExxonMobil and the withdrawal of a rare binding proxy access proposal at Netflix after the board adopted its own bylaw. Just talking about the SEC for a second, the key letter in the staff's no action alphabet this season is M, which stands for both mootness and micromanagement. The staff mowed down more than 40 proposals citing mootness grounds this season, mostly governance resolutions where management offered one or more ballot items that purported to address the proponent's underlying concerns. The staff allowed companies to exclude nearly as many proposals, most of these on the environmental and social side of the ledger, including the aforementioned climate change proposal at ExxonMobil, by arguing that proponents sought to quote-unquote micromanage companies' ordinary business affairs.
And Pat, have you seen any surprises in the early returns from the polls, from items that shareholders have actually been able to vote on to date?
Well, like the biggest event, the season's biggest surprises so far may be the lack of significant votes against directors and the small number of majority votes in favor of shareholder resolutions. Now, average support for nominees at Russell 3000 companies stand at a sky-high 96.2% of the votes cast so far, and we've only tracked two board nominees at R3K companies who have failed to receive majority support. That's two out of more than 1,250 nominees who serve on close to 200 boards for which we have voting results in hand. Specifically, PriceSmart's Mitchell Lynn had unexplained attendance problems, but under the company's plurality voting rules, PriceSmart deemed that the nominee's 48.2% support was good enough to elect him to the board without further explanation. Plurality voting rules also reseated nominee C. Parati at REIT Global Net Lease, despite her, and this is not a typo, it's 11.9% support due to a host of concerns, including the board's decision to ignore, and you guessed it, past majority votes against other directors. I think Only 11 other nominees have received support from less than 70% of the votes cast, however, and the only company with three or more directors in this category of vote challenge results is Sanmina, where pay panel members drew sizable opposition in the wake of their lackluster response to last year's say on pay failure. The most notable vote no campaign now on the radar screen is at firearms manufacturer Sturm Ruger's May 8th meeting. Majority Action, described in media reports as a left-leaning shareholder advocacy group, and members of the Interface Center on Corporate Responsibility filed a notice of exempt solicitation with the SEC on April 9th that asked shareholders to withhold votes for the re-election of Chair Michael Jacoby and Risk Committee Chair Sandra Frohman. The proponents state that the company's response to last year's majority-supported shareholder resolution, which asked for a report on gun safety in the wake of recent mass shooting events, was quote-unquote wholly inadequate. The dissidents also raised questions about risk to long-term shareholder value and of appropriate board composition. In light of a settlement wave and several meeting postponements, the May contested meeting calendar is light on proxy contests as well. Our special situations research team is tracking a relatively small number of U.S. proxy fights for May, including Gannett on May 16th, Front Yard Residential on May 23rd, and Argo Group International Holdings on May 24th. Majority votes on shareholder proposals have been few and far between so far in 2019. To date, only four resolutions have topped 50% support. Three of them address governance concerns. So one, a call for majority voting at Advaxis, and the other two request to restore rights to call or to act by written consent at Nuance Communications and at Applied Materials. The fourth majority vote came on a proposal asking the board at Walgreens Boots Alliance to report on governance measures implemented related to opioids.
Oh, very interesting. Thank you, Pat, for that. And what are the hot governance-related shareholder proposal topics on U.S. agendas coming up in the weeks to come?
Well, calls for boards to name independent board chairs really were one of the only issues that emerged relatively unscathed by the SEC's no-action process this season. Close to 50 proposals on the topic are expected to appear on ballots before the end of May, making it the clear king of the governance shareholder proposal hill for 2019. Some meetings with independent chair proposals to watch include Boeing on April 29th, IBM on April 30th, Allergan on May 1st, and General Electric on May 8th, I think. If Tesla was last year's poster company for splitting the top corporate slots, Boeing may have that dubious honor for 2019, thanks to concerns about risk oversight in the wake of multiple deadly crashes of the company's 737 MAX planes. Serious concerns have been raised about Boeing's actions, or in some cases, inaction, related to the development, certification, and marketing of the 737 MAX, which is a product which is clearly critical to the company's future. A horse of a different color, however, will trot onto the stage at Allergan's annual meeting as Appaloosa's David Tepper looks to morph his independent chair shareholder resolution into a virtual vote of no confidence on Allergan's CEO chair, Brett Saunders. The hedge fund manager's proposal to really calls for an immediate division of the CEO and chairman titles at the underperforming pharma firm, and it supplanted a proposal from Gadfly John Chevedden, who had asked the board to separate the top titles at the time of the next CEO succession, which is sort of the normal proposal we tend to see these days. Faced with Appaloosa's split them now resolution, the board agreed to Chevedden's original ask and have committed to an independent chair at the time of the next CEO change.
And I know there are a lot of proposals covering environmental and social topics this year. What are the most significant issues coming up on the E&S fronts?
Yeah, it's definitely the larger share of the pie this year on E&S. But political spending and lobbying disclosure proposals, a staple that showed up on ballots for years, really lead the E&S pack for the 2019 season. Close to 50 proposals on these topics are currently in the meeting queue through the end of May. This season's offerings have taken on a greener hue with a focus on energy-related firms and utilities. Notably, both political spending and lobbying resolutions are paired up on the ballots at Duke Energy's May 2nd meeting and Ford Motors' May 9th meeting. One E&S area where shareholders will see more proposals this season is the gender pay gap issue. Last season, most of the resolutions were withdrawn As boards that targeted tech and financial firms rushed to clear gender-focused human capital proposals from their agendas in the wake of the Me Too movement. Proponents raised the stakes this season, however, by asking boards for raw gender pay gap data, which usually shows a much wider gap since it calculates the ratio of pay for all male workers to all female employees, regardless of title or position. Faced with this tougher ask, most directors didn't bite. And as a result, shareholders will vote on nearly 10 proposals before the end of May, including resolutions at Bank of America on April 24th and American Express on May 7th. Proponents are likely to be encouraged by close to 30% average support on two proposals on this topic that have already reached votes.
Thanks, Pat. And lastly, for your piece, what about say on pay votes so far this year?
Well, support is generally strong on say on pay as well. Average support for say on pay at Russell 3000 companies to date is 91.6% of the votes cast based upon slightly less than 200 overall disclosed vote results. So far in 2019, only three Russell 3000 companies, and that's out of more than 160 where we have votes in hand, have failed to receive majority support. Software firm PTC saw in its advisory vote draw 41.7% support after CEO James Hempelman received a special $40 million performance equity award on top of his annual equity awards. Nuance Communications, 47% support, was much higher than 2018's 9.7% result, but the company's response to last year's failure could not offset some recent changes to the company's pay program that undermined pay for performance and an excessive severance payout valued by ISS at more than $18 million to its former CEO. Also on the list, Fuel Cell Energy's 48.4% support likely reflects the board's failure to engage with shareholders or to make meaningful changes to its compensation plan following 2018's low say-on-pay support. And finally, just eight other companies, including Walt Disney, Hologic, and Sanmina, the company I mentioned before with the board elections, have fallen into the red zone with a sub-70% support so far in 2019.
Thank you, Pat. And staying with U.S. compensation, Beth, let me turn to you next. What are some upcoming high-profile meetings with pay-related issues on the ballot?
Well, Georgina, there are several meetings where pay practices have attracted negative attention. Earlier this month, the International Brotherhood of Teamsters urged investors to say nay on pay at Verizon Communications' May 2nd annual meeting. Specifically, the Teamsters criticized the low performance bar set for a promotional grant of performance share units with a target value of $10 million made to newly appointed CEO Hans Vestberg and separation payments made to his predecessor. While it's common for new CEOs to receive promotional awards, the Teamsters raised concern over the PSU's targets being set below prior year's goals for EVP of Global Operations, John Stratton, in addition to having a potential payout opportunity of 200%. The Teamsters also argued that retirement payments paid to Stratton were egregious, given that his alleged intention was to retire in August 2018. The Teamsters further claimed that the board considered Stratton's retirement a qualifying termination, which triggered large cash payments that would not have been payable with a typical retirement. However, the company confirmed in an SEC filing that Stratton's exit package was triggered because he was let go, which constituted a qualifying termination under the terms of the company's plan. Over at Discovery, CEO David Zaslav's amended employment agreement is drawing unfavorable attention due to a $115 million mega grant in the form of options and performance-based shares. The grant will vest in five exercise price tranches, with the first two tranches estimated by ISS to be worth nearly $52 million. This special grant comes in addition to Zaslav's annual cycle awards of stock appreciation rights, performance-based restricted shares, and time-based options valued at $17.8 million. The most recent agreement also provides for modified single trigger cash severance, a practice rarely seen at firms in the S&P 500. And finally, following the elimination of 162N tax deductibility of performance-based compensation, other NEOs at Discovery received less performance equity and higher base salaries, partially due to the tax law change. In line with this action, the compensation team is looking out for additional cases of higher fixed pay components in the wake of the elimination of 162M.
Have there been any positive actions on the compensation front?
Yes. On a positive note, at Equifax's May 2nd AGM, shareholders will benefit from some extra protection with an enhanced clawback policy. A new CEO, Mark Begor, was appointed in 2018. The CEO's employment agreement includes an expanded definition of a for-cause termination in an apparent response to the company's adoption of an improved clawback policy in 2018 in the wake of the company's massive data hack. The new policy provides the committee with discretionary authority to recover incentive compensation from current and former employees engaged in misconduct, resulting in significant financial and or reputational harm. Begor's employment agreement expands the definition of a for-cause termination so that termination can occur if potential misconduct results in financial or reputational harm. Back to you, Georgina.
Many thanks, Beth. And now we'll move on to the Canadian market. John, when do you expect to hit your peak busy Canadian period for the 2019 season?
Georgina, with bank meetings behind us, the Canadian research team is working hard to process around 200 meetings that will be held during the second week of May, representing our first proxy season peak. While most of the larger companies will have held their meetings by mid-May, we will see a second peak towards the end of June, when many of the smaller TSX and venture companies hold their meetings. By the time the dust has settled, we will have processed over 1,300 meetings that will be held during May and June.
And the Canadian bank meetings often attract some interesting proposals. Have there been any surprises this season?
No big surprises, Georgina, as shareholder proposals on ballots at the Canadian banks have received generally modest support this year. Pay equity ratio proposals at six banks, for example, have received average support of only 5.9% of the votes cast. Resolutions asking five bank boards to create technology committees have created average support of just 2.9%. The shareholder proposal asking Scotiabank to revise its human rights policy to require the bank to consider the policies and practices of commercial lending recipients with respect to impacts on human and Indigenous people's rights and free, prior, and informed consent drew support from 9% of the votes cast.
Okay, and beyond the banks, are there other shareholder proposals that you and the team are tracking and clients may be interested to note?
Yes, some upcoming shareholder proposals reflect the rising tide of activism on environmental and social concerns. At Cenovus's April 24th meeting, a proposal requests that the company set and publish science-based GHG emissions targets that align with the goals of the Paris Agreement. The April 26th Imperial Oil meeting includes a shareholder resolution asking the company to hold an annual say-on-pay vote. And on May 2nd, Bombardier shareholders will vote on a shareholder proposal asking the company to collapse its dual-class share structure, to report voting results by class of shares, and to integrate ESG criteria into its compensation programs for senior executives. The shareholder proposal asking to integrate ESG criteria into pay plans is also on the ballot at TransAlta's April 30th and SNC-Lavalin's May 2nd meetings. Transat's and SNC's agendas also include proposals asking for more information regarding how the board determines director independence. Then at Loblaw, shareholders will vote on a shareholder proposal at the company's May 3rd meeting, asking the board to disclose information related to the internal pay gap between executive pay and the median employee pay, as well as an analysis of the relative size of the pay gap and report on the need for adjustments to executive pay in certain circumstances. And at TransCanada's May 3rd meeting, shareholders will vote on a proposal requesting that the company report on its policies, practices, and performance in respecting internationally recognized standards for Indigenous people's rights. And finally, a shareholder proposal on ballot for Magna International's meeting on May 9th asks the company to expand its disclosure to include key performance indicators on human capital management and human rights due diligence related to the company's global manufacturing sites and supply chain.
Okay, thanks, John. Gosh, quite a lot going on there on the ESG proposal side. And what about contested meetings at Canadian companies this season? Have you got any coming up?
Georgina, we are seeing more high-profile proxy contests than usually around this time of the year. The Methanex proxy contest, the largest Canadian target by market cap since Agrimen 2013, was settled before the meeting with a dissident and company's largest shareholder, UK-based M&G Investments, settling for one board seat. While TransAlta's proxy contest appears to be on ice for the moment, US-based dissident shareholder Mangrove has publicly stated it would withhold from three TransAlta nominees at the company's April 26th meeting. The three nominees, including the chairman, were members of the special committee which negotiated a $750 million investment by Brookfield. The dissident also made an application to the Ontario Securities Commission and the Alberta Securities Commission to require the company to allow its shareholders to vote on the Brookfield transaction. However, after the OSC deferred the case to the AOC, Mangrove withdrew its application before the ASC. Then at Hudbay Minerals, a Toronto-based Waterton, a 12% shareholder, looks to put five directors on the 11-member board at the company's meeting on May 7th. The dissident announced its campaign in mid-February, and it appears since then settlement negotiations have been unsuccessful. But Waterton asserts that the company has underperformed due to a flawed strategy which has damaged the company's credibility, and that the board provided poor management oversight. And finally, at Knight Therapeutics faces a board challenge from Israel-based Medison, the company's second largest shareholder with a stake of 7.3%. In 2015, each became a significant shareholder of the other, with Knight acquiring a 28.3% equity interest in closely held Medison in exchange for approximately a 10% equity interest in Knight at that time. In addition to Mayor Jacobson, who is Medison's founder and CEO, who is already a Knight board member due to an investor's rights agreement, Medison has nominated an additional five independent directors to the eight-member board. Medison's key assertion is that Knight has failed to build a specialty pharmaceutical business to commercialize products in Canada and select rest of the world markets, and that Knight has simply sat on its cash, leading to a stale share price. The meeting is scheduled for May 7th. And interestingly, in both those cases, the dissident elected to use a universal proxy card, which if voted on would allow shareholders to vote for an a la carte board made up of both management and dissident nominees. And that's the update for Canada.
And that's it for our US and Canadian proxy April update and podcast. Thanks to John, Beth, and Pat. And thanks to you, our listeners. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast. Please watch your email for the next installment and send any feedback or questions to bulletin@issgovernance.com. Thank you for listening, and goodbye for now.